Blog Talk Radio.
Your host, Wayne Benitez. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to our tribute to Roddy Roddy Piper call-in show. And let's go to the lines. Hello.
Hello.
Wrestling X Factor Radio.
How's it going, Rob?
Who's speaking? Who's this again?
You got Rob on the line?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, our co-host, Rob Acosta.
Oh, what's up, everybody?
Yeah, going. I'm doing good. Just watching this pathetic Republican clown show debate.
I think more people are actually debating than are actually in the stands.
Yeah, at least it's more entertaining than SmackDown. That's what Vince is missing on promos.
I'm expecting him to just pop up out of nowhere and just cut a promo during the debating.
Right. You have any memories of Rowdy Piper?
Well, you know, I grew up watching wrestling in the 90s, and I missed out on a lot of his good stuff. But I do remember his feud with Goldust being huge during the 90s. And then, obviously, his jump to WCW was pretty big. But I had to go back and watch all of his glory days from the 80s, his classic feuds, his great promos, a lot of great stuff that we've missed.
Definitely a lot of great stuff, definitely. I remember as a kid watching when him and Snooker had his at the Piper's Pit, and Piper hitting him over with a coconut. To me, that was interesting, and you know, a lot of heel heat from I got, you know, I had caused, you know, caused me as a kid to hate Piper as a heel, but he did a good job at it, though.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, another thing to bring up, too, is that his feud with Bad News Brown was tremendous as well. Just that whole grade and the whole, I hate to bring it up, but, you know, the half black face is obviously something he's remembered for now.
Right. Yeah, this was definitely before the Nation of Domination skits the DX Domination skits. Yes, Piper was like every and a lot of major companies, he started in the West Coast from California. He played a major heel, definitely with the Mexican audience over there also.
Yep.
When he was feuded, yeah. Definitely with Chavo Guerrero Sr., that they had a lot of feuds also. Even a hair versus hair match.
And he goes through a lot of this in his podcast with Colt Cabana that he did recently. I think it was just a few months ago, but yeah, he talked a lot about you know, his start in wrestling, and a lot of the guys that he met along the way, and you know, even the early, like, first couple of WrestleManias he did. So, I mean, if you want to get a good, clear, you know, picture of Roddy Piper at his best, you know, definitely look into that podcast.
Definitely that. And he was one of the definitely played a major part of WrestleMania, kicking off WrestleMania 1. I think he was the main reason it stayed a major success.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, being the big heel of that main event there was huge. Huge for, you know,
right.
The upcoming WrestleMania, where, you know, he played a big part in it.
Right. And he definitely made Cyndi Lauper famous, definitely. The boost her record sales right there. That time when had one, right, that gold album, and he used it on Captain Lou Albano's head right there.
Yeah.
Right. I think this actually did also get MTV even more popular also.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That boom period in the 80s where they were just coming out. And I mean, for them to get some any kind of, you know, mainstream attention like that from, you know, five-figure number of people there. It was huge back in the 80s for sure.
Right. Yeah, I still don't know why Cyndi Lauper is not in the WWE Hall of Fame yet.
I think it's just a matter of time. I don't think she's been in any legal troubles or anything, so it's kind of surprising. But I'm not sure one of these years.
Yeah. Definitely, yeah. Because they did phase out Tammy Lynn Sitch also with her bad behavior and, I guess, trashing WWE. That's what caused her. Them to get
right,
Trish Stratus to put in there, yeah. I still remember the Piper and Mr. T feud at WrestleMania, going into WrestleMania 2.
Yeah. I think above all, that's one of the, I guess, maybe not the shining moment. I think if you had ever asked Piper 2 years ago what his shining moment was, he probably wouldn't call it the Mr. T fight, but, you know, it definitely got him a lot of publicity and probably opened the door for him into Hollywood, but it's something that, you know, all wrestling fans definitely remember.
Right there. Yeah, they definitely remember that also, that that caused a lot of mainstream, and even I've seen Mama watching Entertainment Tonight and had Mr. T doing the interviews on what he has in store for Piper and everything, and even though Mr. T, yeah, I think Piper was way more experienced than Mr. T with in boxing, because Piper was trained by Jean LaBelle also.
Right.
But Mr. T was known as a bouncer and a tough guy also, but he wasn't he was definitely drained during that match at WrestleMania 2. But Piper had to end up doing hill tactics and other things to make it more interesting.
Right. I mean, just having the two, you know, talk back and forth together is just, I mean, that's gold right there. It's a genius idea to put them together.
Right. Yeah, even at WrestleMania 1-6, the tag match with and they had also the enforcers of Ace Bob Orton and Jimmy Snuka at ringside, and but I noticed that they didn't want Piper to do the JOB in that match, so they gave it to Paul Orndorff to lay down. I just noticed that they was trying to protect Piper so much as a number one heel, definitely. I think they was trying to do the right thing to continue to stretch out.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, he was their, you know, their guy, their top deal. And, you know, when it comes down to it, you always need that top deal to, you know, put
right
over the faces, put over the big guys.
Right. And we have another co-host joining us, Tommy Two Chips.
Hey, I'm listening to your show. I'm talking about Roddy Piper, and my memory of Roddy Piper, the first Starrcade ever. Him and Greater Hammer Valentine had a dog collar match, and this was about, I think, '83, like the early
'80s,
It was bloody. I personally missed dog collar matches. I don't know why they stopped them, but they were like some. We ever had a bloody, a bad feud. We had dog, dog collar matches when we were in the feud. That's one of my memories of Roddy Piper.
Right, and until they turned into a horrible gimmick, touch fork size of the corner with the chain.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Russian change. Yeah.
That was similar to the Texas strap match, you know, touch of four corners. You know, I don't know which came first, a dog collar match or Texas, Texas bullwhip match, you know, match. I don't know which one came first. Texas bull rope match. I don't know which one came first. But that's my memory of Piper.
Right.
Well, you know, my favorite memory of Piper. But I, man, Walter, it's another memory I had. Oh, my goodness. This was wild. He was fighting Brown. You know, he had the guy had the finishman of the Ghetto Blaster, Bad News Brown. And they were
Piper
on the
talking,
mat.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were just talking about that, right?
Right.
And that was like, you know, that promo he gave was like, what the hell? Look at that. What? It was wild. But the dog collar match is my favorite Piper memory.
Right. Actually, even though Vince McMahon gave him, you know, permission to finish out his NWA commitments also while still being in, when he signed that deal with WWE, that time when Vince took over the company from his dad. And I was surprised about that from Dave Meltzer when he was telling the story in the newsletter that day. And also some other things about Piper that Portland Wrestling, where Don Owen, as a promoter, he respected him that much that he wouldn't go every time when Dave comes to town, he wasn't going to wrestle there in Portland. Unless it was for Don Owen or Charlotte also, North Carolina.
I gotta admit, the Piper knew how to do business. I think him and McMahon had a good business relationship. I never heard any kind of bad blood between those two. I heard bad blood between McMahon and the Macho Man.
Yeah.
McMahon.
Oh yeah, but later on though, it did. That time in 2003, that time when him and Sean O'Hare, remember that storyline he was managing him?
Yeah.
Right.
And he appeared on HBO Real Sports with Brian Gumbel, and he exposed himself about using steroids or other things.
Oh, yeah, I remember that interview. Yeah, I saw that interview.
Yeah, that's
this man got really...
Yeah, he got really irritable about it. Still remember that the next day he was fired from WWE.
Wow.
Yep, they killed Sean O'Hare's push right there. He started getting buried, then he got released, Sean O'Hare. He had potential also.
Yeah, he did. Sean was a good wrestler.
And stuff, yeah. I thought it was like pre Bray Wyatt when he did his promos and stuff.
So I have a question. Here's something maybe y'all can answer this. How did the character Rowdy Riot Piper came about? I know he wrestled in NWA before, and then he came into WWF/WWE. So how anyone know the history of his character?
Oh yeah, even though he's Scott, his family is Scottish also.
Scott, he was born in Canada, right?
And he had his first match in Vancouver with Lurdy X Henning when he was 17.
Oh, so it's like pretty much, hereditary, basically. You know, it was in the genes.
Yeah, and also in California, they hit it big right there. He was a heel right away with his tactics, even throwing out, spitting out tacos to the fans and everything.
Yeah.
But one thing I got to remember, I like Roddy Piper. Nothing, I repeat, nothing has come close to Piper's pick. Nothing has come close. I don't know why it hasn't. but nothing has come close to it.
Yeah, there's a lot of invitations out there, but that Piper too was just, it was gold every time.
Right.
And even Y2J, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Even Miz was trying to brought that up last Monday, but he don't realize that it was Buddy Rogers' corner first before Piper's pit.
Yes. Oh, yes, that's right. It was Buddy Rogers' corner. I forgot about that. Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Come on, memories.
But you got to give
yeah.
Piper credit as the first heel to come up with this own segment.
Yeah, that's true.
And you should see him.
Wow.
Right. He was like, and there was Salvador Palomo. He was sort of like before this was Santino Marella from Italy. He was bashing him and a lot of Italians and stuff. Piper.
Yeah, Frank Williams was a guy who wasn't Italian, but he beat the crap out of him in Piper's pit.
Even with the Hillbilly Jim, Cousin Luke, and them, he ripped them the new asshole on right in the segment also, make fun of their sizes and everything and them being hillbillies.
Yeah, he did. And one on Saturday night's main event. It was a Piper's Pit on Saturday night's main event. He was, you know, just talking about them. And then Jesse Ventura came in the ring and was on Piper's side. And he started making fun of him. I remember that was on Saturday night's main event one time.
Yeah.
That
even
was
wild. With, I still remember, they showed a clip of him doing a promo with This was still about Jimmy Fly Snooker and Tonga Kid taking his place while he was until he was recovering from the coconut and everything. And he was like, he brought him down and said, "I'll bury your whole family." And he sort of like shoot on the whole Samoan family, Alpha and all of them, Sika and all of them. But instead of saying like Tafigi and everything, what he would do to all y'all got dozens of family and y'all family relatives. That was sort of like an insider right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Family and everything.
That's what always made him such a good guy, such a good legend, is that, like, you know, he always knew what to say to pop the crowd and always being really, really honest. And I think the fans just kind of latched on to him because of it.
Yeah, they definitely did during the mid '80s also.
Go ahead. I'll let you talk.
Even the music videos they did for the WWE first album, for everybody. That was a good one also.
Land of a Thousand Dances.
Yeah, that one too.
That was on the WWE album, the first one.
Yeah.
Can anyone name five people who was on Piper's Pit off the top of our heads? Five wrestlers. Let's see. I can name these. Rocky Johnson. They had a segment. He insulted Rocky Johnson like pig time. I mean, seriously, racially insulted him. Then Rocky Johnson got even with him. Then let's see. It was Jimmy Snooker, the Tonga Kid. Black Jack Mulligan was on there before. That was, you know. Then another person I can remember that was on there was Andre the Giant.
Oh, well, I remember that also, yeah.
So, like, Black Jack Mulligan was on there, and then he had his own thing, Black Jack Barbecue. And that was it was something like Piper's Pit, but it wasn't popular as Piper's Pit. And all that.
Right.
But I'll tell you something. You have great wrestlers. I mean, great wrestlers who had great mic skills, like Chris Jericho. His highlight reel wasn't close to Piper's Pit. And Chris Jericho was a very good wrestler, very entertaining. Then you had the Peep Show.
Right.
You know, Christian, it didn't catch on. You know, Christian was a good wrestler, but his mic skill wasn't all that. So it was okay. The closest thing I got me the closest thing that came close to Piper's Pit was Brother Love. That was the
right.
closest thing that came close, of, you know, that you know, was almost like on the level of Piper's Pit. Brother's Love's little thing he used to do. I love
yeah, stereotypical.
You.
Stereotypical, like, minister and evangelist.
Right.
Right, right.
That guy was entertaining.
That's Bruce Prichard, yeah.
I mean, for me, I really liked, I mean, I know you mentioned Jericho, but I always loved Jericho's highlight reel. I thought that was, if anything, that was the closest one to me because, you know, when I think about memorable moments over the last 20 or 30 years, obviously Piper's Pit comes up. But the highlight reel with Jericho and Shawn Michaels comes up as well. And I right. felt like if there was anything that was close to Piper's Pit, it was the highlight reel.
Right.
Now, they brought that back a lot, too. They, you know, I think they brought it back like 3 times. You know, Jericho left, they brought it back, then he left again, they brought
right,
it
right.
back. So,
also
there was something there.
Don't forget the Jake the Snake Pit also.
Oh,
snake
I forgot
pit.
About that one. Oh, I forgot the Snake Pit. Wow.
The Dark Side and promos and other things.
Yeah.
That's another guy with tons of promos and ring psychology.
Yes. Right on that.
And it's a worse is a good seller. Jake the Snake dirty DVD. They still have up there. This was before they went PG and after Chris Benoit.
Is it Jake the Snake still fighting battling cancer? Because he had cancer for a while. Is he still battling cancer?
He had fought it. They removed it. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, he's doing indies. Yeah, he's doing indies. Shows, yeah.
And something about Piper as a wrestler, I mean, just talking about not my skill, my Piper's Pit as a wrestler. Do you know when he first started wrestling, he was really small? He moved up every single weight class from, you know, lightweight to heavyweight. He kept on getting bigger and bigger. He kept on getting better as a wrestler, you know?
Right.
He held, because I know that, he held a U.S. title.
Right, go ahead.
I know he held a U.S. title, you know, before. I know he held a couple of tag team titles. Now, refresh my memory. Did he held any titles in the WWE, WWF era?
The Intercontinental title. I think he won the late 80s, I want to say.
Oh, not 91 from the Mountie.
Right,
okay.
Right.
And he lost to the Bret. Yeah, that was definitely a good 4.5-star match. That was when Bret Hart started to get a major push. And don't forget the tag belts also, him and Flair, in 2005 or 2006.
Yeah, I knew he won a tag title. I knew that, you know, with Flair. I think other people, too. Him and Greta Hammer Valentine
right.
held a tag team title before they start feeling it with each other.
Right.
But would it be any other person like Piper? And I can imagine, okay, this is just I'm just throwing it out there, it's kind of far out. But I can imagine Dean Ambrose, if he changed, could be like maybe another Piper because he has the attitude similar, but the mic skill is not there.
Right.
If I was,
Right. Yeah, he just needs to be more and more like John Moxley, when he was in CCW and Dragon Gate.
Right, right.
But
I think both Moxley and CM Punk drew, you know, direct comparisons to him. Just, you know, on the mic.
All right, CM Punk, that's a good name. CM Punk had good mic skills. And it was a good commentator. Even CM Punk was a good commentator. He was a commentator a couple of times.
Yeah, he was
for like maybe a couple weeks. Yes, he was. But Mighty Piper as an actor, I only saw one of his movies ever that he was in, It was a movie about aliens. I think they live, they're here, or something like that. It was like during the 80s. I saw it on HBO one time. You know, it was okay as an actor, but what happened to his acting career anyway? He just stopped doing it, or
no? He was continued doing movies that made it to the theaters and B movies to write the video. He did a lot of those even in the 90s into even the 2000s. Don't forget, he got another one coming out. I think it's like a thriller. And next year, that's going to be released. That's going to be one of his last movies. And he did do the Pro Wrestlers versus Zombies also, which I got on DVD. That was from the Shane Douglas promotion in Philly. That's no longer. Yeah. That actually had Matt, guys like Matt Hardy, Kurt Angle, Jim Duggan, Facade, was Raven in there? I think so. He was the lead star in that one.
Now, if I want his opinion, here's a question for both of y'all. If y'all going to sum up Roddy Piper in a short phrase, how would you sum up Roddy Piper? And would you put him on your list of greatest wrestlers? It's a question out there for the both of y'all.
Yeah, he's definitely in the top 10.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I'd definitely put him in my top 10, given the era he wrestled in. And just his overall, presence was obviously ahead of his time. His wrestling was good for, the 70s and 80s and 90s. And but his presence and his talking was just way ahead of his time. So he's definitely a top 10 for me.
Now, I would put him in a top 10, but not for as wrestlers, but for as people who deserve to be world champion, never been world champion.
Yeah.
There are lots of wrestlers that should have been world champion, or had a shot at the world title, and they never accomplished, one or neither or both. Arn Anderson for the Horsemen should have been a world champion. I would love to see him as a world champion, but he never pursued that. I would love to see Roddy Piper.
And then
he
also retired early because of a neck injury. Yeah.
And it's like other people.
Right.
Like Ronnie Garvin, I don't know if you remember this guy, Ronnie Garvin, Handsome Stone, Ronnie Garvin, became, world champion. And Roddy Piper had more skills than he did.
Right.
But by the time Roddy Piper, Ronnie Garvin was in the NWA, Piper was in the WWF, /WWE at the time.
Right.
So, I just think he's on the top 10 list for
Ronnie,
people.
Yeah, but Ronnie Garvin got buried in WWE, though.
Yeah, he was in it. How long was he in the WWE, Ronnie Garvin? How long?
In
was 80, it a year?
One year, 80, late 88 or 99.
Okay.
That's the only history of WWE later on in the late 80s or early 90s. They mostly kind of buried the ones that came from NWA or WCW.
Mm-hmm. They did, but they kind of they promoted the Brainbusters. Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson, they came tag team champions quick, and then they just disappeared all of a sudden.
What happened was Arn Anderson got more money from since Ted Turner, was there and stuff.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
And also they had a new management at that time, so he took more money to go back to WCW, but Tully Blanchard got fired from WWE for selling the drug test.
That's what ended
right there of his chance of ever going back to WCW at the time because they know that he failed the drug test. That actually killed his major run in any company. So he ended up doing, I think, USWA, and he stayed quiet for that was the end right there. That was it, like his career.
That's right. That's on the Horseman DVD. I forgot about it. Yeah, that's right. So that's what happened. Forgot
right.
about that.
Yeah, he was getting high and all of this cocaine and stuff. Yeah.
Now, do you think know that, you know, a lot of wrestlers' children want to get into the business? Do you know if Roddy Piper's kids want to get into the business, or that's kind of like quiet right now?
One of his kids already in the business, Colt. Piper, he did MMA, and even when Piper brought back Portland Wrestling, I think it's still on YouTube from the 2 years ago. I think they started in 2011, and his son was wrestling on there also.
Wow.
I think this was his oldest son that was in WCW that time as a kid, and Hogan in the NWO, humiliate Piper in the ring, and Piper start smacking Hogan and Bischoff around.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's glad you know Cole's interested in getting in the business like his dad. That's
right,
pretty
cool. And Vince signed. I think they need to sign. Give him an NXT deal.
Now, here's a question for the both of you. Roddy Piper was on a Legends contract. He made special appearances, you know, every now and then in the WWE, on TV and in other places. Would you use Piper more, or you think Piper was used just right, just being on a Legends contract and making appearances every now and then? I personally was trying to, you know, fit Piper in there somewhere, you know, in the mix of things, because it's because of his mic skills. But what do y'all think?
Right.
I think because of how good he was on the mic, it'd be really easy to just put him in there with, you know, someone they're trying to get over, someone they're trying to push, and just get him in there with Piper just to get the name recognition. But, I mean, using him once or twice a year definitely could have benefited anyone, but I guess they didn't see it fit.
How about you, Wayne?
Are you talking about with Piper?
Yeah. Would you use him more than he was used? Because he did like one or two appearances on TV a year. Would you use him more?
I would have used him more, but Vince McMahon blocked most of the Legends from taking any bumps or stuff. That was the only thing I didn't like about Legends for the last 2 years showing up on Raw ever since Lawler had that heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And Vince is so out of touch. That was actually that was genetically what Lawler had caused, because it runs in his family. Because any wrestler things can happen in wrestling. It doesn't matter if they're old or young. Things can happen in the ring.
I'll use Piper more than Hogan. That's what I'll be honest with you on that. But we won't get into that. But I would never use
right,
Piper more than Hogan.
but more people, Vince was using them as a ratings getter or for merchandise,
yep.
and a plug. And he was just there the whole WWE network. The plug that was the reason they brought him back right there for the network, and to be a WWE ambassador.
Yeah, Piper will always live on. I'm saying you will not. There's so many stuff. Piper made so many classic moments. He will, even 50 years from now, when we have grandkids, the three of us have grandkids, we will still be talking about Piper. Trust me. He's gonna be in a wrestling, in the annals of wrestling history.
Yep. It's going to be even easier now with the, I mean, hopefully the network is still around in 50 years, but, you know, with the network out now, I mean, it's so easy to access some of these older guys that, you know, the younger generation may not know about. So, you know, hopefully 50 years down the line, you know, the network still be around and, you know, the younger generation then can still take a look.
Right. Yeah, I think it would be more interesting, though. It's just so shocking that this year and last year a lot of mainstream wrestlers passing away.
I know. Let's see, with Dusty Rhodes, Piper, Buddy Landell, who else are missing?
Vergonha, yeah.
I mean, and not, you know, not none of these people.
Also, Tommy Rogers.
Tommy Rogers,
at a young age, yeah.
Wow.
What, 54?
Yeah. Okay, 54.
Wow. He looking 40. I mean, he looked like in his four, looked way younger in his 40s. And
man, but sad as it is, these wrestlers dying. If y'all remember, wrestling used to get criticized for wrestlers dying before they're 40. That used to be a bad thing. ESPN did stories about it because, you know, British Bulldog died young. You know, what's his name? Barr, who the guy did Beetlejuice wrestling gimmick, died young.
Yeah.
You know, and all two other wrestlers. So this is kind of like.
That was mostly from the 80s, 80s to the 90s and the early, I said the mid-2000s. Because I was like, it was kind of threw me off when both of Public Enemy the tag team at a young age.
Mm-hmm.
I think in 07 after Chris Benoit, I think it was Johnny Grunge. I think Rocco got it two years later. I mean, he was the first one to die, and I think in 05.
Rocco Rock died.
Yeah.
Grunge got first, and Rocco Rock died after him.
Grunge was actually overweight. That time at the ECW reunion show also, I think this was like Shane Douglas' ECW reunion show.
Did Piper never wrestle on ECW, did he?
Oh, he never did.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think it was just WWF, WCW, and, you know, the other promotion.
AWA early, and maybe in his beginning days of early 20s.
Right.
And he was there at TNA for a couple years.
Right, yeah. I think he made some appearance, maybe one appearance for Ring of Honor in the early years.
Yeah. He definitely made those also. But I'm still surprised that he didn't do Major League Wrestling.
Yeah. So, let's see, Piper started his career, I think, in the 70s, right? Started in the 70s, and then he wrestled from the 70s. Wow, that's a long, expensive career he did. He said on Real Sports he had over, like, 1,000 matches, 10,000 matches. So, that's a long career he had.
Right.
Long career.
I guess on the road, you know, twice, wrestling twice a day or during those times and going to city to city.
So, Roddy, how was the relationship between Roddy Piper and Jimmy Snuka?
They had a good one. Yeah.
Had a good one. Because oh, man, that Piper Pit was just like legendary.
So
not only legendary, but it was just, wow, that was humiliating, man. You had a good relationship or to pull something like that off. I wouldn't do
right.
it.
But I've noticed that the other companies, when they went to, like, even that defunct XWF, I think that was Jimmy Hart's or supposedly Hogan's thing that did horrible.
Hogan
never made it.
Thing. Yeah.
Piper and Snooker had one of their reunions of the Piper Coconut there. Of the 80s, and Tina Hinton with the Coconut. Even I think they did one for was it TNA, early TNA, or some, I think even the indie shows, they was doing the same thing, mimicking what happened in 84.
Mm-hmm.
It was always Piper that always, you know, go over Snooker doing a segment still. I think it wasn't TNA with Sanjay. I think Sanjay Dutt came out for Snooker's rescue or something.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right. You know, TNA always did try to copy, you know, WWE some way in shape, way, or form. Always try to use the stars and everything.
No, during the Vince Root, not the early days of TNA, but when they, I would say, and when he went to Spike TV, when Vince Russo took over, the whole writing team of, and they got rid of Scott D'Amore, and it was him and Jeff Jarrett and stuff.
I think it was also Cornette. Jim Cornette was involved as well.
Yeah, but Cornette, yeah, was a road agent. He didn't have a lot of authority on Jeff Jarrett or Vince Russo. But what happened more was when they started copying WWE way more when Hogan came in the company. With
and
the season fire. Yeah.
And that's when it really got worse when Hogan came in there.
Right. And I still say the Feast of Fire is still a ripoff of Money in the Bank. Except for the only thing is getting fired. They get most of their releases getting fired is like legit, like when their contract over or they about to get released from their contract.
Right, right.
Yeah, I agree with you with the ripoff.
It was kind of different in a way that it was more than just one briefcase. You know, I think they had four. And, you know, each one
right.
had a title shot in it. So, I mean, they at least try to make it a little bit different, a little more unique. And, you
right.
know, the Money in the Bank match obviously has a lot more prestige to it, but I actually kind of like the Feast of Fire match. It's a lot more unique.
Yeah, and I like the way also even Lucha Underground, I think 2 weeks ago, did a thing about it, about the gold medallions or putting them in the belt, and that's gonna get you a chance of getting a world title shot. But he was joking. Dario Cuadro said that, yeah, we're not gonna do it like like this other promotion does it on TV, and they everyone bust out laughing at and in the temple that they was gonna do it that only if. Is up to him if they get the shot.
Lucha Underground should become popular. I mean, there's a lot of potential in that in a company. A lot of talent, a lot of potential. It has good leadership. It has a lot of stuff going for itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but
I think
right.
the main problem is that they're on a network that isn't exactly, you know, seen by everyone. You know, if they got to
right.
a more popular network like Ben Channel or Univision, which is, you know, they get millions of viewers per day, you know, then they'd really be cooking. But, you know, on LRA Network, then they're not really going to do good ratings. And it sucks because the product is really, really hot. They definitely deserve more. Oh, hopefully they get it.
Right. And I was just surprised about how good it was from other people that haven't watched, even my friends that haven't watched wrestling for ever since the Attitude Era. All of a sudden, it came out the blue and was saying that about the Lucha Underground show.
Right.
That actually brought them back to watching wrestling.
Well,
it's very strange too. It's very strange too because, I mean, Lucha Underground is like the polar opposite of what the Attitude Era was about. You know, Attitude Era was just, you know, a lot of great storylines that just caused a lot of mass appeal and everything. Lucha Underground is totally based on the wrestling product and completely opposite from the Attitude Era. So it surprised me that it got such, you know, rave reviews from those kind of people.
Yeah, and even they nominated for a Daytime Emmy for Best reality show soap opera. And definitely they still waiting for clearance if they're going to be picked up by Luna Vision or Tel Aviv also in Mexico.
Right. And it's a little worrisome that you know, we're getting into the fall season of TV shows, and you know, they still haven't got a second season list. So I'm hoping something comes soon, but it's a little worrisome.
Right. And I just hope they I just wonder when is the Daytime Emmy Awards gonna come. I wonder if they in September or before August. I hope they before August, and if they can get that award also, I think that will help them to get a deal done with Luna Vision.
Oh yeah, that would definitely help them. I guarantee they'll get one. They get win an Emmy Award. That would definitely give them. What's the Emmy Award for? You know what it's for? Is that best sports show or something?
Best drama. Best drama and reality show. Because don't forget Mark Burnett that does the Celebrity Apprentice. Him, Robert Rodriguez, that do all those movies with his cousin Danny Drago.
Mm-hmm.
And also you got Conan being the booker and one writer that used to be in Betty, Big Dick Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
And they got him and the Triple A owner also as co-producer.
Right.
And I just like they don't stereotype no wrestlers or anything. They let you don't see these crazy run-ins and stuff that all of a sudden
they stick to the wrestling, the actual wrestling, you know.
Right. No, not yet. I guess until they get that major TV deal and they draw an audience also.
Right, and for it being just an hour-long show, you know, you can only do so much. So you've got to definitely put, you know, you got to put a lot of emphasis on the wrestling. Like, you got to make sure that, you know, people know this is still a wrestling product, even though it's, you know, kind of a soap opera, you know, on LRA Network.
Yeah, and they were saying 1 hour is worth it instead of 3 hours because a lot of people have other, you know, they lose their attention span. I think it's best for it to be 1 hour until they can draw a huge audience.
No, absolutely, yeah. I mean, 3 hours is just way too much, as, you know, as we've seen for most Mondays. You know, it's really rough to sit down for 3 hours straight and watch. You know, watch one product, but, you know, for a one-hour show, definitely something the way the wrestling style is for Lucha Underground, too. It's a quick hour, and it's you know, balls to the wall, and it's exciting. So for 1 hour, it's a lot.
Right.
Yeah.
Just with Ring of Honor, does that also. The only thing is, even TNA or what else? Jeff Jarrett, Global Force Wrestling is still trying to get a TV deal. It's going to be tough, definitely for TNA, because if they don't get no deal, they're going dark after September.
It's really tough because
all right,
go ahead.
I think it really do suck. You, Rob, you're right about that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they were really fighting for their lives last year at the end. And, you know, they had some good news at the end. They got their TV deal and they're back. And, you know, 9 months later, here we are again talking about how they could be going dark again, how the company could go under. And it just doesn't look good for their public image, you know. Even if they put out a
right.
really, really good product, which they do at times.
Right.
Not easy.
But I blame Dixie Carter for just calling them idiots by sending an email about the ratings, complaining about the ratings. That's what did it right there.
Right.
Even a horrible decision to have to hire Big John from Tough Enough as vice president of talent relations and the creative department, and he never had those experiences in WWE ever.
Right.
And even that time when I don't think they should have let MVP go, put the blame on him about Hernandez still being.
Yeah. That was such a ridiculous situation for TNA to be in. And, you know, I really do put the blame more on TNA than Hernandez. I mean, obviously Hernandez is a big culprit in this. What a stupid move it was. But, I mean, you've got to know who's under contract where before you're taking these people on. Especially if you're going to put them on and build around them.
Yeah, I think John Gerberg should have been fired or demoted.
Yeah, I mean, if someone had to get fired or demoted or something, I mean, it's easy for them to do with MVP because he's just, you know, quote unquote, another talent for them, you know, among the other talents that they have. But yeah, he took the heat on something that he definitely shouldn't have.
Right. And he don't have no experience even with that. Where was the TNA? Do they have any lawyers or legal teams? It's crazy.
Yeah, you would think by now they would, but I'm not sure.
I guess they don't want to pay for that anymore. Even with they're going to do this invasion angle from Global Force Wrestling coming up in the tapings.
Right. And for me, you know, looking on as a fan, it kind of seems like they're doing anything they can to try to get ratings at this point. So, you know, an invasion angle sometimes works. It, you know, draws some interest, draws some buzz. But I think in this case, TNA's public image is done at this point. And whenever you hear TNA, it's just a negative thing now.
Right. And even with the Global Force is not established yet, and also they brought in Chris Masters and Tyler. What's the one? Justin Gabriel. They were known as jobbers. Yeah. Jobbers in WWE, that's the only thing that mainstream going to still remember them as jobbers in WWE.
Right.
Not nothing serious yet.
Yeah, Yeah, and I mean, if there's any benefits that you know, for the independent wrestling fans or the overall fan in general, the guys who would like to see guys like Chris Masters, CJ Black, Brian Myers, Trevor Lee, these guys are actually going to be on TV at least for the next month. So, yeah, at least we get to see them again.
Right. Yeah, Trevor Lee is, he surprised me being at the tapings.
Yeah, he's one of the hottest, you know, up-and-comers right now. And it's, you know, 99% attributed to his stuff to beat up.
Right. And I just definitely missed that PWG. I heard it was a good show with the one that they had Lucha Underground Recruits there, even WWE Recruits was there, and Seth Rollins was there to watch.
Right. Yeah, I think that was their last show a couple of weeks ago.
Wow.
Yep, you know a company's getting big when they start sending, Regal and Rollins to check it out.
Right. And I was surprised they was actually interested in the ring announcer for Lucha Underground, but she's on the contract for Lucha Underground.
Right.
Yeah, but they signed those. I think most of them have now. I think most of them have those 7-year deals in Lucha Underground.
Which is it's a crazy deal too, because you know we just talked about how they're not even greenlit for a second, and
right.
You know they're over here signing people to multi-year contracts and whatnot. But you know, hopefully they get everything sorted out because
I
mean, who doesn't want to see guys like Ricochet and Killshot, Shane Strickland, Willie Mack? You know, you want to see these guys on TV because they're so good.
Right. I think that they pay them just like TV deals, like a sitcom deal and stuff.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it's like per appearance, you know, because of the few dates that they do. Because Lucha Underground doesn't do any house shows. Everything is TV for them. So they probably just do per appearance or maybe one set salary, something along those lines.
Yeah, I heard it was good, even good money to John Morrison. Morrison and several others also.
Oh yeah, guys like Morrison and Patron, those guys definitely make the big bucks just because of their name from WWE and their worldwide recognition.
Yeah. I think even Son of Heaven has a 7-year deal also.
Right,
Matt
that's another guy that's very exciting too.
Right, and I still, he was actually on Tough Enough with Eva Leeds also.
Right. Yep, they were on Tough Enough together, and Matt Cross, the guy under the mask, he's been around for a while. He's done just about everything. I mean, Ring of Honor, PWG, WWE, he's been around, so. You know, the fact that he's finally getting on TV and something steady, it's great to watch.
Right. And I think another guy from Tough Enough also, Moth Martinez also on Lucha Underground. Molly, I think this gimmick, he's played like the Mark or something.
I'm trying to figure out who he is. I can't remember.
Oh, in a yellow shirt, and he come out like I think Dario Cueto gave him a spot outside of Lucha Underground.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what he wear a yellow T-shirt, and he keep being close to like that ring announcer. Assess whistle.
and I think he kidnapped Sexy Star at the last episode of Lucha Underground. Wow, that's we definitely need, everyone definitely need that show to stay, to keep going for the fall season.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, just the general idea of more wrestling on TV is, you know, it's necessary. And I feel
right.
like there's a lot of wrestling on TV now, especially considering what it was, you know, 3-4 years ago, where it was just WWE, TNA, and, you know, if you
right.
had local wrestling, sometimes it'd show up on TV. But, you know, now there's,
yeah.
there's so many companies on TV right now that it's huge.
Yeah. But they on those second-rate networks.
Yeah, and that's the problem, is that I think the you know, the bigger networks are kind of scared to take that risk. You know, the negative connotation with wrestling is that it's, I mean, if it's not WWE, then it's not worth it, and, you know, the violence aspect of it, you know, they'll start thinking about, you know, the Chris Benoit story all over again. You know, it's unfortunate that that's what they think, but it is what it is.
Right. I'm thinking that, they definitely need a major network to take wrestling. That's the only thing that the TV industry is not high on, pro wrestling. I think that's the only thing right there, also, because the TV advertisement don't want to sell the wrestling.
Right.
The network.
And I think even if you look at, like, WWE's ratings, where, you know, they're still drawing in, you know, 3 million,
right.
4 million people, you know, the ratings are down considerably compared to what it was 10, 15 years ago. So, you know,
yeah.
obviously networks look at that and they say, well, wrestling's not as, you know, as popular as it was back then. It's not going to do our network any good. So, you know, they'll just fill it in with something else.
Right. And I think they mostly down to, like, 4 million, and 3.5 average ratings, because if they only get to 4 million mostly this year.
Right, right. And there's even certain segments where, you know, I hate to say it, but even a guy like John Cena, where his segments don't tend to draw very well. And, you know, the ratings will even dip even lower than that. So I think it goes to show that, I mean, it's something that big networks look at when they look at the risk of taking on a wrestling show.
Right. Wow, that's crazy. I'm still even shocked about that they spent they not even in a they was in rank number 5 to 7 and for hours and on cable network television for the several weeks.
Right, and Monday is not an easy time to go on either, especially during certain times of the year. I mean, you get into they're actually going to get into it now with September, October, when, you know, football comes back, baseball gets into the playoffs, and basketball comes back. You know, really, they have the summer to kind of, you know, get their ratings, prep for SummerSlam, which is huge for them. And
right.
you would think the ratings would be a lot higher now than, you know, during the fall months, but not the case.
No. I think even with Undertaker and Brock Lesnar not being on, like, on every other week and stuff, I guess until the go-home show.
Right, right. And, you know, even that, you know, it generated some buzz, but you can see it really didn't affect the ratings that much. So, you know, they take a hit in the sense that they brought back one of their biggest names, and, you know, another big name is Brock Lesnar is back, and it's not creating the type of rating increase that, you know, they wish.
Right. Yeah, and I think the only way Vince will get motivated is another wrestling company comes along on a major network and does all of a sudden does like 2 to 3 million viewers.
Right, right. And what's ironic about that is that at one point, I mean, TNA a few years ago were doing 1 million viewers, and even a little bit before then, they were hitting about 1.5. You know, not hitting 2 exactly, but they were hitting 1.5. At the very least,
yeah,
they were getting close to SmackDown, but, you know, Vince
yeah,
never budged
doing...
on.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right. Vince never really budged on his stance on them. He never felt, you know, scared or anything. But, you know, the moment
right.
Ring of Honor gets on Destination America, he starts, you know, flipping lids and creating new rules, and it's kind of ironic.
Right. And I still that's the average age of viewer on Destination America is like in his, I think, 54 years of age.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because Ring of Honor plays a lot of those, how would you call them?
Right.
They play commercials for, you know, for that age range, the 40s and 50s.
Right.
I've always found it kind of weird, but
I guess
they know their audience and they're playing into it, but very strange.
Yeah, Sinclair Broadcasting, yeah. In which they have money, you know, back, tons of money, Sinclair Broadcasting, and they do also even, I think they stock market also.
Yeah, Sinclair's on the stock market, but I don't think Ring of Honor necessarily is, but, I mean, Sinclair is obviously, I believe they have more money than the WWE does, so... But the problem is that they budget Ring of Honor into their overall budget, so it doesn't end up making the best.
And they work their way up to pay per view also, business.
Yeah, and it's been up and down, but they got one coming up in September, and obviously the one in December for Final Battle, so that'll make 4 this year, which is more than they did last year, and. I mean, so long as it continues to improve and the buys are there, I can't see it being a bad thing.
Right. And then I also, I still remember that they was talking to Spike TV before Destination America this year. They had a couple talks with Spike TV.
Right, right.
And I think it was about them being rumored to be on a 1 hour Friday block with Bellator or Kickboxer.
Right, right. And, I mean, that'd be huge for them. Because, TNA pulled in, 1 million at its worst, on Spike, and I can't imagine Ring of Honor not being able to pull in, 500,000, 700,000, something in that number.
Right. And I think the worst Spike TV they didn't do for TNA was to promote this, the Impact shows to the mainstream.
Right. And that seemed to be a thing within TNA as well, unfortunately, is that, promotion was so bad that, Spike TV wasn't promoting them. People like Hulk Hogan weren't promoting. You kind of never knew where TNA was in terms of house shows or, if they were coming to town or anything. So
or
it was kind of overall the promotion was bad.
Yeah, I still remember on the shoot interview, Kazarian and Daniels, I think, even brought up about how come TNA didn't have no production truck to have TNA Impact Wrestling on there, like show maybe like an AJ Styles, Jeff Hardy, or Bobby Roode.
Right, right. I think that seemed to be across the board with a lot of the guys that, either left or got fired from TNA in the last couple of years, but they said, they never really promoted the product. How are the fans or, the potential fans supposed to watch your product if they don't even know where it's going to be or, when it is or anything?
Right.
Having big names like Kurt Angle or Jeff Hardy, I mean, a lot of the people that watch wrestling, who watch WWE and all that stuff, they thought people like Angle and Hardy retired or just left or something. They actually didn't know they went to TNA. So that's the bad part.
Right. And even the guys, veterans, was upset. So the press going walking through airports and like Nash when he was there with Mick Foley was saying that, where have you been all these years? I haven't seen you. He said we wrestle on Thursday, and he said, for who? They never heard of.
Right, you know, right. That should have been a big red flag for the company. It's just that, you know, you bring in these guys from the WWE like Angle, Hardy, Foley, the list goes on, and you know, you brought them in hopefully with the intent. They don't even know where these guys went.
Right. And I even noticed that the only time they promoted TNA was that time for Monday Night up against Raw for the Bret Hart return and TNA like NWO reunion.
Right, right. And that was I believe that was the highest rated TNA episode. I think that was the only episode that got 2 million viewers.
Almost 3 million. In one segment, that was the NWO segment that did almost a 2.0.
Right, right. And then, you know, WWE brought Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart back together, and they practically doubled
right.
the audience. So.
And they messed up the ball right there. Then they went back to Thursday. Then they went back to Monday without promoting.
Right, right.
And they got killed, yep.
And the funny thing is that it's even on a smaller network, that's still happening. They've gone from Friday to Thursday now in less than,
right.
you know, 8 months. And, you know, that's another thing, is consistency, is that, you know, when Monday Night Raw comes on, you know it's from 8 to 11, you know it's every Monday. You know, with TNA,
right.
it's just like, all right, it started off on Fridays, then it went to Thursday.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows what could happen before the end of the contract.
Yeah, Wednesday night, all of this, it's crazy. 8 o'clock Thursday, that was the worst decision.
Yeah. They really wanted to capitalize on that, you know, prime time hour, but it didn't really help much.
Yeah. And I noticed that I think Jeff Jarrett interview said that he made horrible bad decisions on of certain stuff when he was in TNA.
Right, right.
And that was the Vince Russo booking right there. That's the only that's the one thing that he put himself that made a horrible decision.
Yeah,
even
it seems like, you know, Vince Russo after the 90s was very, like, not a good decision for anyone, but, you know, the companies kept bringing him in, and, you know, even TNA used him, I believe, last year, even. And,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and I was actually, because his dad never did want Vince Russo in the company.
Right.
And I think that he's finally on good terms with his dad. It's been like 9 years now.
Right, right. I heard they hadn't talked for a long time because of, you know, everything that happened.
Right. And his dad was trying to keep telling him, even on a shoot interview and stuff, that Dixie Carter and her family don't know how to run a wrestling company. They will never learn. I even also thought that Dixie Carter made she was too much of a mark for like the business for bringing in Hogan, Bischoff, all these even like the Nashes, the Nasty Boys, and all of them, think that they was their best friends and stuff.
Yeah, for me, it was always the people they didn't bring in that probably could have helped versus the people they brought in thinking that would help. And,
right.
you know, there's always that big story floating around that Paul Heyman was ready to go to TNA, but, you know, Dixie wasn't going to give up her control, and that even Bryan Danielson was going to follow Heyman if he went. I mean, that would have been huge for TNA then. And,
right.
You know, they kind of dropped the ball on that one.
Yeah, and it was because of legends. Paul Heyman didn't want to work with dozens of legends. He would rather work with one or maybe two.
Right, right.
Right. But she didn't want to do that, so that's what killed it right there.
It's kind of funny how she gave so much power to people like Hogan and Bischoff, but, you know, didn't want to give it to Heyman, who wouldn't have ran wild with it, you know, no pun intended, like the way Hogan and Bischoff did.
Right. And you also had Vince Russo also. Look how the way they treated Okada there when he was there.
Right, right. I mean, there's a long list of, you know, people they treated kind of, you know, suspect. And, you know, Young Bucks, Okada's on three big ones. You know, even to an extent where, you know, guys like AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, who made their star there, obviously, but, you know, could have done so much more, as we see now.
And they burned bridges with New Japan that time because of they didn't want to work with Vince Russo because he's stereotyped against Asians and even Hispanics also. Yep.
Yeah, and now looking at how hot New Japan is and how hot they've gotten over the last 4 or 5 years, it's like, you know, what a mistake.
Right. I know that they have a lot of working deals with the NWA, Global Force, Ring of Honor, who else? CMLL, a few others. No way.
Right. They got they got a couple of, you know, partnerships with some of the companies in the UK.
Yeah. I just wish they can get partnership with Dragon Gate.
Oh, New Japan.
Yeah.
That'd be pretty insane, but I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't really think that New Japan and Dragon Gate are rivals per se, but considering that New Japan is like the WWE of Japan, and Dragon Gate's probably, I mean, I'd put them as the quote-unquote TNA, only a lot better and draws a lot better, but, you know, they're kind of like one and two.
Right. And I still remember when I was watching when Impact, I mean, TNA's pay-per-views, I think it was the World Cup they did in Texas, and they actually had Tanahashi on there on the same team as I think, SEMA.
Right, right, right.
And I was saying, wow, all this talent that TNA dropped the ball on that didn't, because of Vince Russo.
Right, right. I mean, New Japan, you know, they send over some wrestlers, you know, to America just so they can learn, you know, learn more, learn better. I mean, they've got one guy floating around, Watanabe, who's floating around Ring of Honor, and he's been a couple other places. But, you know, they send these guys over to get an actual, you know, good training, good matches, maybe even a small push. And, you know, what they did with Okada and Tanahashi, it's kind of a slap in the face.
Right. Even with Ring of Honor, they use Jay Lethal the right way.
Right, right. And it goes to show, like, you know, there was definitely talent in TNA back in, you know, 06, 07, 08, during the years where, you know, the product was really, really good. It's just that, you know, they still weren't being used as highly as they could have. You know, Lethal right now is, like, one of the hottest things going in wrestling, Styles, Bullet Club, with, you know, with the Young Bucks as well. So you can see everyone that left TNA, their stock has risen. They left.
Right. It's like Hogan ran off the most talent because Dixie was being too much of a mark. And even with Jim Ross was close to signing a deal with TNA to come in as vice president of talent relations, but Dixie called her father turned him down for Hulk Hogan and Bischoff.
Right, and this was all at the same time with, you know, with the Heyman deal as well. So just
right.
Imagine instead of Hogan and Bischoff, you know, they would have gotten Heyman and Ross, who were, I think, could have been a lot more productive to the product than, you know, Hogan and Bischoff were.
Yeah, I think they would have brought in they would have had their revenue up, the pay-per-views up. I think Jim Ross would end up firing Vince Russo.
Right, right. And, you know, I don't really know how much of a ratings increase they would have gotten out of Heyman and Ross, because, I mean, when you look at Hulk Hogan and you look at Eric Bischoff, they're two polarizing figures of, you know, the 90s of that Attitude Era, you know, of WCW when they were at their best. And, you know, having Heyman and Ross is obviously a big thing, but I think the ratings increase is probably bigger with Hogan and Bischoff. But I think the long-term, you know, would have been a lot better with Heyman and Ross.
Yeah, they would have brought in younger guys from the Indies, and even had development systems and everything. Even would have brought up Gabe supposedly was going to work with Paul Heyman if he would have came into TNA. That's what.
Right.
Paul Heyman wanted. Yep. Right there, that would have been the WWN network right there.
Yeah, probably. I mean, you know, we wouldn't have gotten Dragon Gate USA or Evolve, but, you know, we would have gotten a better number two product to go up against WWE, which I think is, you know, a little more important.
Definitely would have took, even Shine would have been, you know, it would have been more, the Knuckles division would have had these ones coming in, like Mercedes Martinez and others.
Right, and, you know, even at that time, TNA had a really good women's division, and it was actually being showcased really, really well, but, you know, on a product that's not being watched, kind of like, you know, who cares?
Right. I think when Hogan took over, they, most of the top ones left, like, Cheerleader Melissa and
Right. And Kong, I think, yeah. Left as well.
Hello?
Yep, sir.
Yeah. Yep. I thought I lost the signal from the station.
All right, now I'm still here.
Yeah. But definitely, I think it's going to be, I just had that feeling it's going to be RH and WWE just the only ones on TV this fall.
I mean, the way it's looking, yeah, that looks like that's going to be a real possibility.
Right. But the only thing they still had to pay for views for, like, I think CZW signed a new deal for
a national pay-per-view.
Yeah. And AAA.
Yeah, AAA's got their pay-per-view coming up this Sunday, so... Yeah, you know, even the international stuff is finding its way.
Right. And I think they're going to be fighting for a TV deal by January and February for them to be on Global Force or TNA.
Right.
And the TV executives bias against pro wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that it's not the market it once was. I mean, if this were the, you know, mid to late 90s right now, and all these companies were around, I mean, who knows how many of them would be on TV, you know, because I'm sure any major network cable would want, you know, to have wrestling at that time. But, you know, given that it's 2016 and the popularity has dropped, unfortunately, it's a huge risk for a company to take it on. And, you know, for the ones that have, you know, they barely break even. And the ones who don't, it is what it is.
Right. And I'm just surprised that even some of the TNA, I think they had more hookups of possibly talking to being on a pop network or CBS because of Julie Chang, like, for example, like, maybe
Gail, they can do, like, Gail Kim can come on the top or something because she's married to Robert Irvine.
Right, right.
And do a cooking thing right there, and they can, you know, bring out wrestling TNA and stuff. And because Julie Chung's married to the CBS executive.
Right, right. And you would think they would try to use these kind of relationships as, you know, something to promote and, you know, something they can get, you know, viewership out of. But, you know, something else they missed the boat on. Missed the boat
Even Mia Yim, you know, her dad, I think he works for a CBS affiliate, and he, you know, he has a history in the military, showcase that also. Like wrestlers, like even with indie wrestlers, like lives before they do pro wrestling or anything, you know, to show them that they actually are professionals and or even you know, their daytime jobs in the indies, maybe as a office executive or even as it's a few of them that's also police officers also.
Right, right.
ESPN can do all these inside the lines and stuff. They can do it with indie pro wrestlers and stuff.
Right, right. And even TNA's had, you know, they've had football players, you know, wrestle matches on the show. You know, they've had MMA fighters, and you know, they've tried to, you know, bring some mainstream attention to the product, but I think they always go about it the wrong way.
Right. I think they had tons of opportunity, even for PWG when they had Joey Ryan. They could have did a working deal with PWG.
Right, right. And I think they did take a couple of push from there. You know, they took Ryan. They took TJ Perkins. And they also used Scorpio Sky for a little bit. So, you know, they looked at PWG and saw some talent, but you know, they never really never culminated into anything huge.
Right. I think that could have been interest that they would have used Joey Ryan as a road agent or a writer also, just to bring in talent and stuff and promote PWG.
Right, right. Well, the problem is that, you know, TNA they don't really want to associate themselves, you know, with the indies or with any other company, really. But,
right.
mean, at least not a couple of years ago they didn't. They do it a little more now, obviously, with Global Force Wrestling. And
right.
even with Evolve, Drew Galloway and, you know, David Richards as well. So, but back then they didn't really want to affiliate with, you know, a company like PWG. They just wanted to take talent, you know, make something of them and hopefully generate some money out of it.
Yeah, they did it because of they didn't have no more house shows. So the guys can get more work.
Right, right.
But I think Gabe Sapolsky, they was on bad terms. Gabe Sapolsky even Ring of Honor and Dragon Gate USA because TNA was using their talent appear on TV, like Christopher Daniels came back from TNA and he supposed to have been under a mask for a while. They didn't want him to show his face on TV, Ring of Honor.
Right, right.
But Dixie didn't care and he came out as regular Christopher Daniels, and that's what they burned another bridge in Ring of Honor.
Right, and I think the more legitimate Ring of Honor got, the less TNA obviously wanted to be, you know, they saw the competition there rather than like a working partnership, because, you know, Ring of Honor, they try to keep on and up and up, and, you know, when they got bought by Sinclair, you know, that's when everything really meant business for them. So it was less about partnerships with people who are ahead of you and more about trying to, you know, get ahead of them.
Right. I just think teenage just needs to just get it to together right now. Even get rid of John Gerber, get a new management team in there.
Yeah, I think that it might be a little too late for them to really restructure anything. You know, the problem is
right.
that their name is poisoned by the last couple of years of everything happening with Hogan, everything happening with Spike, and, you know, everything happening now with Destination America. So, you know, that name TNA is tarnished by a bad reputation. So
right.
the best thing they could probably do is just cut their losses and go. It kind of sucks to say because a lot of wrestlers would be out of work for, you know, from that company, from TV and everything. But, you know, TNA doesn't – I feel like TNA is not really going anywhere at this point.
Yeah, and I think her family keeping the TNA alive because of Dixie Carter is one like to make her happy.
It's kind of a double-edged sword with the Carters is that, you know, they saved TNA and they brought TNA to new heights that, you know, no one thought possible, but at the same time they also killed the product.
Right. Yeah, I just think that they, right now they're going to be doing, I think, it's going dark and doing, they got to do their international commitments, and I think they might just, they probably do it on YouTube and stuff.
Right, right. And, I mean, anytime any company goes dark, it's not a good thing. So, especially for, you know, a company that needs TV, that needs to be out there for any type of exposure, it's not going to be good if they have to go dark.
Right. Even with, I'm wondering what is Jester's next move, or he just want to hold out to next year if he doesn't get no deal right away. Lucha Underground also, I wanted, they're going to hold up to maybe February. Even with WGN also, I think TNA was talking to him earlier. But the only thing, they do got Billy Corgan, and I think Billy Corgan has ties to WGN since his days with the Smashing Pumpkins also. I'm surprised he's not doing no talks to him. And I think already TNA burned their bridges with the TV industry. We just hope, wrestling fans, that TNA, Ring of Honor, I mean not Ring of Honor, Global Force and Lucha Underground stays around and gets TV deals for this year and next year. And we're about to close up our final minute of Wrestling X Factor. To the Rowdy Piper fans out there, there will never be another Rowdy Piper, but his spirit will live on in our universe. This is Wayne Benitez signing off. Later, everyone.